Jack McLennan was 27, fit and visibly strong.
He was trained well. He knew how to hit and I was gobsmacked.
He seemed ready for anything, but then he suddenly vanished.
I was just talking to him last night. Like, how the hell does that happen?
I'm Rob Bergen. Join me as I investigate what became of Jack in the new season of Unravel.
There has to be something more nefarious going on.
Search for the Unravel podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Orgasms are barely studied in women in general. And so I would say that my mission is to make sure the science gets into the hands of women so that they can live to their fullest sexual potential.
Orgasms and sexual pleasure are wondrous Easter eggs in the video game called Life, and they come highly recommended from Ladies We Need to Talk HQ. But too often, what makes pleasure and orgasms happen for women is either completely overlooked or assumed that if it works for a bloke, it'll work for us as well. That means that for some of us, we're playing this life game to the end and not even getting a single Easter egg. Watch sex depicted in culture, in porn, in a hilarious sex comedy or steamy period drama, and you would be forgiven for thinking that like a dog starts to drool when you open their can of food, women get aroused when a man's fly gets unzipped, that pleasure exists in crunching hairless bodies together like two Barbie dolls in a salad bowl, and that we orgasm on the fourth or fifth thrust. That kind of sex is not grounded in reality. But myths persist, and so it's high time to turn from fiction to fact. Enter Dr. Laurie Brotto. Dr. Laurie is a professor of obstetrics and gynaecology at the University of British Columbia in Canada, where she also leads the Women's Health Research Institute. She's a registered psychologist and the author of two books on mindfulness in sex. Orgasms don't have to look like they do in movies and TV. They can be messier, gooier, slower, more awkward, and far richer in real life. I'm Yumi Steins. Ladies, we need to talk about the female orgasm with Dr. Laurie Brotto. One of the primary questions that has been driving sex research in the last 30 years is, what is stopping ladies from getting horny?
So this has been the big enigma that has been the focus of a lot of research since Viagra was approved in men.
Yes, that simple little pill for blokes has been keeping them hard and horny since 1998. And it was a pharmaceutical cash cow. So Big Pharma got cooking and funded a bunch of research. And a sensible starting point was asking the question, could Viagra work for women too?
Turns out it did almost nothing. It had no impact on their desire or motivation. What it did do is it brought more blood flow to the clitoris.
But blood flow was not the problem. Sorry, Big Pharma, suck it. Or don't suck it. The problem wasn't about the functionality of women's body parts. It was about the quality of sexual experiences being offered to them.
If it doesn't feel good, if it's not rewarding to them, if it doesn't take them to a place outside of the mundane, which is where we spend a lot of our time, then we're not going to have desire for it.
The way we understand sex is catered to male sexuality, but what works for them doesn't apply to us. Along with a bunch of cultural and societal factors, there are biological differences when it comes to sexual responses between the sexes.
I think it comes from this idea that sexual response in women is just a reflex, right? If you press the button hard enough, fast enough, strong enough, with the right frequency of the vibrator, it'll elicit an orgasm. And we know that that's simply not true.
And thus, we come across a major roadblock to female pleasure.
Even with the perfect stimulation, if her mind is elsewhere, if she's thinking about the to-do list, if she's having an intrusive thought, if she's having recurrent negative memories or dissociation in the moment, all of that is really evidence that the brain is the biggest sex organ. We've known that for quite some time.
So if our brains are the vehicles to the sparkly rainbow wonderland of orgasms and sensuality, it makes sense that mental clutter can get in the way of arousal.
Stress is a major factor when we look at the contemporary woman who's balancing multiple roles, multiple demands. Maybe she's in a sandwich generation where she's caring for kids and elders at the same time. And that just kind of chronic, never-ending to-do list creates a lot of stress that both physically and psychologically can dampen desire.
I think it's often about body image as well. There's this sort of chattering voice of going, oh, I'm gross, or I think I look disgusting in this position. Is that something that your research has illuminated?
Yeah, absolutely. And is a large part of the reason why I've done so much work on bringing people into the here and now and rooting them in their sensations, because it is so true and it is highly gendered. And I would argue is actually getting worse. Like, we're seeing more younger women with body image related concerns because they can directly compare themselves to other, you know, other bodies on social media, or they'll come into the office with an image from, you know, an excerpt from porn and, you know, be quite upset that they don't sort of look the same way, perform the same way.
This tendency to have internal chatter is what pioneering sex researchers Masters and Johnson called spectatoring back in the 1970s.
And it's this idea that you're kind of watching yourself perform from a bit of a distance, and it completely disconnects you from yourself and from the present moment and makes sex performative as opposed to something that we kind of fully embody and engage in.
Dr. Laurie says you have to be present to notice when your brain gets caught in a body-hating spiral so that you can bring your attention back to enjoying yourself. But that inner voice can be super loud and persistent.
And so a common scenario would be as a partner starts to move their hands to a part of the body that you're unhappy with, you become fixated on it. You can sense every movement of their hand getting closer and closer, and you start to have the dialogue. Should I move their hand away? Should I block that part of my body? Should I turn the other way so that they can avoid it? Should I let it be and breathe through it? And all of this is happening while a person's trying to get aroused. I mean, you can imagine the brain is trying to figure out, like, what should I be paying attention to? You know, all of these active steps to avoid touching a certain part, or the real task at hand, which is getting you aroused.
Dr. Laurie trains people in mindfulness for better sex. Now, I'm admittedly a bit shit when it comes to mindfulness. It's this thing I know that I should do, but every time I try and sit still and, like, look at a raisin for 5 minutes and cultivate a sense of calm, I get super bored. It is legit, though, and Dr. Laurie says it's a skill that can keep us in the zone.
There's been dozens of studies that has evaluated where people actually practice these skills, get really trained at being able to notice when the mind takes off and redirecting it back to pleasure. And sometimes there's work for people to do outside of the bedroom. Maybe there's some deep work that needs to happen there to kind of get you back connected to your body.
God, don't we all need some deep work though? It's kind of a weird double entendre there. I did that by accident. Doctor, we've got some listener questions that I would love to put to you for your advice. The first one comes from Solange, who's looking for something she feels she's lost.
Where did my orgasm go? Years ago, I used to be totally fine, and I would say 90% of the time I had sex with my partner, I had no trouble orgasming. Now I have Marina and I'm in perimenopause, and I am so struggling to orgasm on penetration, and I miss it.
What's your feedback for Solange?
Yeah, I mean, my feedback, first of all, is was she really reaching orgasm through intercourse? Because only a tiny fragment of women, 10 to 15%, will reach orgasm purely through vaginal insertion. So more often what happens is there's clitoral stimulation at the same time. Mm. So one of the questions I would have is, has there been a change in your positions during intercourse where the clitoris is no longer being stimulated, right? So as bodies change through aging and maybe some weight gain, or maybe there's a chronic physical pain, are you no longer having sex where partner is rubbing up against the clitoris?
Sure.
So that would be the very first thing I would wonder about. But also we know with perimenopause, most definitely are hormonal changes, right? So with the drop of estrogen and progesterone and those receptors are all over the body, it can reduce responsivity. And then the last thing I'll add in is there can be a lot of pelvic floor changes that happen with age and with perimenopause, and would advocate strongly that she get an excellent pelvic floor physiotherapist to make sure that she's got very good control over her pelvic floor. Sometimes that can be sufficient for women who become anorgasmic during midlife.
That term anorgasmic means orgasms are less intense and less frequent, or they're entirely absent. But on the other side of the coin is ladies listener Leah.
My question is about premature orgasms in women. Is that a thing? I feel like I have that. Like, often I will orgasm really quickly when having sex with my husband, and then I would like it to be over, but then I just keep going for him. And if I watch porn, I can orgasm without even touching myself. So it's not a terrible problem to have, but I would like to last a bit longer. And I wonder if other women experience the same thing.
Yeah, so premature or early orgasm in females affects about 5% of women across ages. And the strategies we use are identical to the strategies that we use in men with premature ejaculation, where this is much more common, affects about 20% or so of men, and that is extending the arousal phase. So first of all, really critical that she knows where that point of orgasm inevitability is, right? And in order to know that, she needs to pay close attention to the building arousal. So as soon as she senses that she's getting close to that, quote, point of no return, you would stop stimulating.
Okay.
Right? And so in people with a penis, what we do is the stop-start technique. So let's say if he's masturbating, as soon as he senses that, he stops, or they stop having intercourse. They prolong the arousal, they ride it, and then they resume. So it's a behavioral method. There's no medication to treat this. I certainly would not advocate distraction or things like that. We actually do want her to be fully present and pay attention, but it's really about prolonging the arousal by inserting some periodic pauses.
And if she's so sensitive, is it worth considering having an orgasm and then aiming for a second one?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Yeah. So this is one of the incredible things about the female body that's actually quite different from, you know, birth assigned males, is our capacity for multiple orgasms is far greater, right? And so maybe an early orgasm, right? Mm. And then they sort of shift to pleasure that is not about her orgasm. They're doing other things. And then she goes for a second one or maybe a third one after that. So yeah, excellent suggestion. And also one that I would highly recommend as well.
A huge boner killer for women, okay, and I know that's not the best phrase for it, but you get the idea, is discomfort in sex. Dr. Laurie is currently leading research dedicated to sexual therapy for women with vaginismus.
Vaginismus is a condition where women have a severe phobia of vaginal insertion. So they fear intercourse, they fear tampons, they fear gynecologic exams, they fear fingers in the vagina. And for a lot of them, it can be quite debilitating.
Vaginismus happens when the muscles around your vagina tense involuntarily. Sometimes it's caused by having recurrent medical issues around the vulva, and sometimes it's a response to trauma.
And traditional treatment involves having them insert vaginal dilators that basically look like dildos of progressively increasing size while they practice relaxation at the same time. The problem is avoidance is so strong, right? They don't want to do this. They go home after you explain it to them and they stare at the box of dildos and they close it and put it away.
So Dr. Laurie's team created a virtual reality experience. You know those bug-eye looking goggles that you can try on at Questacon? Well, Dr. Laurie's team is using that technology to gradually ease women back into a sexual space.
They're actually fully immersed in a sexual scene that starts with touching and undressing, and then it moves on to oral sex, and then it progresses on to intercourse.
So when the women are enjoying the virtual sexy times, a vaginal probe is used to go inside their vagina to help measure arousal.
And what we've found in our research, that actually two sessions of this virtual immersion can almost entirely resolve their vaginismus. And these are women who've been suffering in some cases for decades.
Wow.
And we're really hopeful. There's been a lot of really great feedback from the women themselves. A lot of tears as well, because they can't believe at just how powerful it is. And I'm not sure if you've ever put on a VR headset before. It's so realistic that you almost like jump off the table because it feels that realistic.
I hate to say it, but it sounds like you're describing a frontier in pornography too.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
I will say that we source our erotica very, very carefully.
Is it taboo to do this research?
Yeah, my applications for ethical review at the university tend to take a bit longer than others. You know, the ethics review boards, they want to see what our participants are seeing. So they want to see the erotica and they want to see the environment and then show me the probe and whatnot. So we just put it all out there for them to see.
Dr. Laurie is a woman of science. When she's not overseeing the therapeutic potential of virtual reality erotica, she's trying to communicate evidence-based strategies for a good sex life. And she comes across a bunch of sex myths that bug her.
I think one of the really common ones is if you plan sex, it makes it dry and boring and unsexy. And yet we plan everything else in our life, including all of the wonderful, blissful activities as well. Those, for the most part, are planned. And what happens when we plan sex is then you can have an extended foreplay. You can think about carving out the time or, you know, kindling the stove ahead of time through other means. But I think that one absolutely deserves debunking, or else it simply won't happen.
A great tip. Put it in the shared calendar and savour the opportunity to feel good. Another myth Dr. Laurie is out there busting is that menopause is a line that once crossed means sex and orgasms are over.
Certainly there's a lot of changes that happen hormonally, physically, medically with menopause that can negatively impact sexual desire. But there's also a lot of amazing things that happen with that. I mean, no more periods. So if you're someone who can't have sex for most of the time because your periods are so heavy, or you have fibroids, or you have such severe menstrual cramps, menopause can erase all of that. And the freedom that comes about with being able to have sex whenever you want at any time in the month can be amazing for those women.
Thankfully, with age, a lot of us start to give less fucks, a secret ingredient for good sex and orgasms.
The confidence and assertiveness that happens at midlife, where we're more likely to ask for what we want and tell a partner to stop doing the things that don't feel good, that sadly so many young women endure mediocre sex because they don't want to hurt a partner's feelings by telling them when something doesn't feel good. So yeah, I think we should look forward to fantastic sex, but it's going to take some work to get us there as well.
We've got one more listener question for you, Dr. Laurie. It's an email we got from Jenny, so I'm going to read it out. She says, my question is, does everyone have some version of a story that helps them along? I need this every time to even get in the mood, and I've never told my partner as the story never involves him, and I think he'd be upset. There is a huge mental effort involved for me to reach an orgasm, which he is completely oblivious of.
Yeah, so let me give this writer full permission to keep this a secret. A partner does not need to know. Chances are a partner might be having their own sexual fantasies as well. So one of the really interesting phenomena that's come out of the sex research in women, when you bring women, say, into a research setting where they're watching erotica and you measure what happens in their body with a vaginal probe, and then you ask them how turned on they are and they operate a handheld lever, is often those two aspects of arousal are totally disconnected. So typically it's in the direction of the body is getting excited and the mind is turned off or not excited whatsoever. So very common, very normal for women to use strategies to excite the mind. And whether it's a totally made up fantasy, whether it's replaying a sex scene from the past, whether it's, you know, telling yourself a story. Not only is it normal and common for a lot of women, it's really important to kind of engage that mental arousal of her mind. So I just want to reassure her, very, very normal to do that.
Okay. And if that person that she's imagining has no resemblance to her existing partner, that's totally okay.
We have no evidence that fantasizing about a person increases the chances of having sex with that person.
Sure.
So she's not at risk of, you know, being unfaithful or anything like that, or losing attraction for her partner. It's a tool. And so we want to think about things like fantasies, erotica, vibrators as tools we use to facilitate arousal. That's all that it is.
That's all it is. Okay, but where is that fine line between using that tool, which I totally get, and also not being mindful or being dissociated?
Yeah, because fantasy is not mindfulness, right? So a mindfulness approach would have her really rooted in the sensations. What does pleasure feel like when it's building? Does she sense muscle tension as it's building? That's mindfulness. She's talking about fantasy, which is going to an external erotic place, and they're both tools that we can use.
Dr. Laurie, is there a way for women listening to increase their orgasms or the pleasure within their orgasms that they could apply to their lives, like right now?
Yeah, I mean, start prioritizing it, first of all. So I want to normalize self-touch and masturbation. So often women will say they've never taken a handheld mirror to their vulva. You know, they don't know the different parts. They're scared to look at the different parts. And I mean, I think first and foremost, we want women to really know who they are, what their parts are, how different parts of the body respond in different ways. In the same way that, you know, we pay attention to moles on our skin as a sign of, you know, potential skin cancer. We don't kind of take that same mentality when it comes to our sexual health. And so I think that's a great starting point, is know your body, give yourself permission to touch.
If life is a video game and there are all these wonderful joys and delights that we're allowed to have that are right there for us, if we can just unlock the secret passwords, then Dr. Laurie would like us all to get access.
I think for so long, I think there's been a legacy of Freud and psychodynamic practitioners that has resulted in women not knowing their bodies, feeling like they're broken. And as a result, we are decades behind in understanding even just the basics of female sexual function compared to men. And yet at the same time, sexual health is such a big part of pleasure and quality of life that women deserve and are absolutely entitled to. And so I would say that my mission is around closing that gap and then using every strategy we have available to us to make sure the science gets into the hands of women so that they can live to their fullest sexual potential.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for joining us today to talk about all things pleasure, sex, and orgasm.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming along. That was so great.
No problem. Yeah, thanks so much for dedicating a whole episode to this topic.
Yeah, it's worth it, isn't it?
It is.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Gadigal and Muwinina peoples. Ladies, We Need to Talk is mixed by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. It's produced by Elsa Silberstein and Sarah Mashman, and our executive producer is Tamar Kranswick. This series was created by Claudine Ryan.